9:30. Welcome to this meeting, a joint meeting of the Standing Committee for Finance and the Select Committee for Finance, dealing with the fiscal framework and revenue proposals as submitted by the Minister of Finance when tabling the national budget on the 23rd of February. Also, welcome to all the different organizations, institutions that will make presentations. This meeting being conducted in terms of the Moneyball Act. She's going to get copies. Mr. Hinton, would you please? Mr. Kumalo.
thank you, Chairperson.
Sorry, you've got time until 10 minutes past 10.
10 minutes past 10. Okay, well, hopefully I will be done by then. thank you, Chairperson, again. Thank you, Honorable Member, for the invitation. Just to start off by introducing my team, I am accompanied here by Dr. Ramos Mavungu, who is the Research Director of the Commission, and sitting on my desk here. At my back, I have, I've got Marina Marinkov, who is our senior researcher in the Macroeconomic and Public Finance Unit, and Mr. Henry Epstein, who is our Parliamentary Liaison Officer, whom you, I think all the members will be very familiar with by now. Apparently the members want you to stand up so they can see you. Okay,
thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
You also welcome Co-Chair Thabo Mofumahadi, co-captain of the team.
Okay, I will just take you through quickly the submission of the Commission on the fiscal framework, and I think, Chair, you have already mentioned there's a legislative requirement for us to make our submission on this particular matter in terms of the money bills amendment and related amendment procedure related matters act. Just to start off this, I just have to put a context to it. The way in which we looked at the request from the Commission from the committee is basically in terms of the context within which we made our recommendations, and I think that is what the Act requires from us in terms of our recommendations that we tabled in May 2010. And I think the most important part of those recommendations that relate directly to the matters around the fiscal framework and revenue proposals were the first two chapters of the submission that we tabled in May 2010. And I think the key message, the key set of issues there were the recognition of the global economic environment within which the economy was operating, and also what the impact of those global economic trends were likely to be over the medium term on the South African economy. In terms of our recommendations, I think the key message was basically fiscal consolidation, and then also coupled with a need to cushion the vulnerable and also lay the foundation for future economic growth as we emerge from that recession. I think in terms of what government overall response to that kind of a message was, I think we got a very positive response there, and we basically can see that in terms of what we had projected for what would happen, we projected that the economy would probably only full recover to its business as usual scenario probably by 2015. So that was the moderate scenario of the three scenarios that we presented seems to be the one that is actually holding, and that is the one that we indicated that drove the Commission's recommendation in the last for the last for this 2011 MTM. Now, what we basically have seen is that the fiscal framework is something like 94 billion rand, and that the focus of that is basically job creation, and it's also on skill development and infrastructure spending. There is obviously the split of the resources that have been released. Basically, 47% goes to national government, and provincial government gets 44%, and local government 8.7%. This is what is actually going to be spent of that. That is of what has been released. Now, in terms of the macroeconomic outlook and long-term fiscal risk, there is actually a realization, a recognition from the Commission that the moderate impact of the recession scenario is the one that is actually beginning to emerge. And I'm saying the moderate impact scenario on the South African economy, not on the globe. So the risk that we have identified, that it could be that kind of a scenario, but if things worsen in the rest of the world, especially in Europe and America, we might have a little bit longer time frame to actually fully recover from that. So those are still issues of caution, and as the Minister of Finance basically highlighted when he tabled this budget, so we still basically have to be very careful about that. And one has to recognize that the fiscal framework basically recognizes that that kind of a global economic outlook. So the key drivers of the economies emerging from the recession, it looks like from the Commission's own assessment, would be in the industries that comprise the majority of exports, mining and quarry, manufacturing being the biggest contributors in that process. Now, we also are very much aware of the exchange rate regime that is actually in place at this point in time, and we also basically support the stance that government has taken in terms of trying to moderate the effect of capital flows in order to try and deal with the exchange rate method. Now, in terms of the key issues that actually are coming up here, is that growth has been put at the center of job creation. So it is important that when we think about the job creation that government is looking at and the amount of resources that government has released for that, it is important that we also think about what are the conditions that are necessary to generate the kind of growth that will be able to generate those jobs and sustain them over the long term. So the issue of laying foundations for future growth is also an equally important matter to take into consideration as we have all of the discussions around job creation and how the jobs will be created. Very key amongst those are obviously improvements in skills development and also the strengthening of the education system. Now, this basically calls for a concerted effort across the spheres of government. In other words, where government prioritizes improvement in education outcomes, the provinces also have to be seen as the key implementers or role players in the education system and also in the area of skills development. Here I'm thinking about the FET sector. While the function itself has moved to the National Department, it's still quite remains at an implementation level. There's still quite a lot of involvement by the provincial sphere of government, and we have a conditional grant in that respect. So obviously the implementation still stays at the level of the provinces, and that has to be seen to be also prioritized in tandem with the emphasis that national government has put in terms of priorities in that area. I think also coupled with this skills development and education would be issues around healthcare, strengthening the performance of the healthcare system, because if the healthcare system fails, then we have unhealthy children that are unlikely to contribute. So we need to look at those in that process. And I think I think there's also an area of research and development that we need to also highlight as a key factor that will be important when we think about sustainable growth in the long term. Can we move? Okay. In the area of the MDG and the achievement of those, we can see that government has made quite substantial progress in terms of achieving the MDGs, but there are still gaps that remain, especially if one has to think about meeting those MDGs by the target date. We have conducted some modeling exercises at the Commission, and we can see that the progress that we have made is probably not sufficient or will not be sufficient for us to achieve all the MDGs targets by 2014. I've provided some examples of some of the results of the exercises. And basically achieving these types of MDGs, especially in the area of health, would require an increase or a substantial increase in the spending on the health budget. Now, what has happened in this year's budget is that there has been direct increases in healthcare budget allocation, but very well targeted at those programs that will assist us to move with a little bit more speed towards the achievement of the MDG. So hopefully, as we move forward, we will see this increases in the health budget also increasing. But the increasing health budget should also not be looked like as just an issue of putting money onto the system. We are aware that in some provinces there is overspending in the health budget, and as we indicated in our presentation last week on the division of revenue, because there is substantial concern from the Commission side that such increases in spending or such overspending is not accompanied at all by improvements in the quality of the service. So we must have a look again to see what is actually driving that kind of overspending if the quality of the service is not anything but education and health, if the quality of the output is not actually improving. So these are areas that we need to quite take some close look at. The Minister also made some reference to the National Health Insurance and also tabled some proposals or early proposals on what government thinking around the financing of the National Health Insurance could be like. Now, as a Commission, we have not had the opportunity to look at the detailed proposals around the NHI. But what we have done is that based on the information that we have actually managed to gather as part of our research process, we have actually carried out some exercises around this matter. And I think I'm going to ask Dr. Ramos Mabubu to speak a bit about what the impact, the likely impact under different types of scenarios for this kind of pesticides would like to generate. And let me just underline this by saying that we have not taken any views about what is the way to finance this, and we have not taken any decisions or views in terms of what you would like to say, because we must still interact with the proposal that the minister tabled. As a commission, we must still look at those and do a little bit more to basically do that. But the work that we have done thus far, I think it's important that we actually make reference to that at this particular point in time.
Okay, thank you. So what we do as a commission is we use the long-term model of the economy to understand the impact of putting in place the national health insurance, and we explore two possible ways of financing the scheme. One that finances it through debt, and another one that finances it through a check on household income. Now, what we find is that when you run the national health insurance through debt finance, which is the red line there, in the short term, gross domestic product goes up, but it quickly falls below the business as usual after expenditures come back to their normal level. And what's important to note is the line below the red line, which is the one financed by household income taxes. That's actually lagging below the debt finance. So what that is telling you is that in the long term, financing national health insurance through, say, household income tax will eventually result in a fall in private consumption, because they're taxing the household income to finance the insurance scheme. And as well, they will be crowded out of private investment, which raises flags for the future growth of the economy through the private investment crowd out. But notice that those are long-term results. In the short term, in the period of 5 to 8 years, when you are expanding expenditures to finance the health insurance, there is actually a positive impact on the GDP secured by the red line. We also check what happens to the fiscal deficit to GDP ratio of these two alternative ways of financing the scheme. And as you can see, the best simulation, which finances through debt, initially starts with a high impact on the deficit to GDP ratio, while the one that finances through a tax on household income has a lower impact on the deficit to GDP ratio, therefore being more preferable to as a means of financing the national health insurance. We also run potential impact on the debt to GDP ratio of the second simulation. And what we notice in terms of the risk that the committee may want to take into account is that the debt to GDP ratio quickly jumps and stabilizes at around 5% of gross domestic product, running into the long run. So, based on the limited information that we have already started identifying some of the risks associated with alternative ways of financing the national health insurance. And the key message that comes out is that for the deficit position, tax financing is preferable, but it does lead to crowd out of private investment and private consumption. Both scenarios in the long term will result in GDP coming down as the system gravitates back towards its normal public spending. Okay, then we've also identified other risks facing the economy, commodity prices particularly. And the work that we've carried out is focusing on crude oil prices. That is the phenomenal rise. And we know development in North Africa is spiked. The price of crude oil to once again above $100 per barrel. So what we do is we run simulations again on the economy to inform Parliament of the potential risk that can imply for the South African fiscal framework. And we find that in the long term, continued oil price increases of the magnitude that we are seeing can reduce African gross domestic product by between 2.2 and 2.5% over the long term. And in particular, the impact on the government deficit varies among the scenarios, ranging from a worsening of 12% to 22%, depending on whether government continues to allow the domestic price of oil to float or to actually put a subsidy to ameliorate the effect of the oil price increase. So if it chooses to intervene in the domestic oil prices, you will get that bigger impact on the fiscal deficit. We also identified debt service costs, which from the Minister of Finance briefing is an ongoing concern. But we do acknowledge that it's necessary for government to borrow the pursue counter-cyclical policies and ensure sufficient service delivery. But there is exposure to foreign exchange risk that needs to be considered going forward. Then on rising personnel costs, these are still rising as a percentage of government spending, and we think that continues to pose an ongoing risk for our fiscal framework. And on contingency reserves for inevitable surprise sectors, these are sectors that may be completely unforeseen from the system. And here we commend the South African system for a lot of foresight in actually setting aside a contingency reserve. But what we are calling for here is that this may actually need to be strengthened given the long-term risks that are now coming on shore that we have not anticipated when setting up the contingency reserve in place. Okay, on the revenue estimates and tax proposals, there are a range of proposals that have been tabled this year. And in a nutshell, the Commission actually welcomes the proposed tax structure to support economic growth. And this is in line with international evidence that when you widen the tax base along the proposed line, it is good for economic growth. Some specific comments on the specific proposal. There's a proposal for a fuel levy increase. Once again, this is reasonable, but continuous increases need to be approached with caution, because last year, if you recall from our submission, we noted again that once these fuel prices get very high, they can start having recessionary effect on the economy. We are not yet approaching those bounds, but one risk factor that needs to be taken into account. Then on fuel taxes, that's your taxes on alcohol and tobacco. We think it does make sense, but we also point out that alcohol and tobacco are addictive products. And there may be cases of households that end up allocating more of their income towards these addictive goods at the expense of, say, food items and education items in the household. And that comes out of one individual that participates to alcohol and tobacco in low-income households, being forced to spend progressively more of their income on those addictive products at the expense of the well-being of the household. And those kinds of anecdotal evidence are beginning to come on the scene that the government needs to take into account in continuous increases in the green taxes. There is oncoming household-based evidence that it can actually result in those the best outcomes where it is the children that suffer as the heads of the household continuously spend more on now expensive alcohol and tobacco products. On the environmental levy, we noted last year that it can have potential negative effects, but the Commission is only in favor of doing something about correcting the environmental distortion. And we await to see a proposal on how to ameliorate the negative effects, especially on poor households, that will come from the addressing that environmental problem. The talk of earmarking within the area where the distortion arises of the revenue raised from the environmental levy and so on, but we want to get the details. The Commission will come back with more detailed comments on that development.
Thank you, Lamont. I think let me just take the final set of issues that we addressed in our submission relate to the proposed guidelines for fiscal sustainability that the minister tabled for discussion during the course of the year amongst the various stakeholders. From the Commission point of view, we have actually started some work around that also and very shortly we will be having some discussions with the Treasury around those proposals. But the Commission's view is that the rules in this can be used for achieving the goals that are stated here. Now, in most cases, in most countries, these rules are implemented because of certain fiscal crises. So they assist economies from emerging and smoothing out the fiscal crisis that actually impact on their budget. Now, in South Africa, I think we are a very fortunate country in that our constitution contains certain rules that basically drive how fiscal policy can be conducted. And also, we have also put in quite a number of pieces of legislation that actually try to deal with those kinds of problems that are being referred to here as fiscal rules or fiscal sustainability guidelines. Now, as we move forward and try to think about this, the Commission would like to highlight that it is important that we actually re-examine how we have been enforcing the kind of measures that are actually in place in our legislation and in the Constitution, basically meant to address some of those issues. In fact, I think for sub-national governments, the law basically already specifies that you can only run a balanced budget. So in terms of the law, you would probably not need to start putting another rule for this, but you need to enforce the rules that you already have in the system. Maybe issues could be different at a national level. So what I just wanted to highlight here is that these rules are actually a possibility, but we need to look at how we are actually going to implement to them if we have to obtain any significant value over and above what we currently have, and if we are actually enforce what we currently have in the system. In terms of going forward around the fiscal framework, I think we have highlighted a few issues here that we still need to focus on those, especially if we have to lay the foundation for growth and also generate the kind of jobs that we are talking about. We need to identify those sectors, and I think in terms of the NGP, a number of those sectors have been identified that would be targeted for that, and one would basically see this fiscal framework linking to that. We also need to be aware of the risks that we have actually highlighted here. All the time we need to identify those potential risks and evaluate them and factor them into the process of developing our fiscal framework. And I think it is important, and I think government is moving in the right direction, that when new matters are being considered that will have an impact on the fiscal framework, government actually gives space for stakeholders to interact with those proposals and allows for maximum input into the process. I think the issues around the NHI and the proposed guidelines on fiscal sustainability are typical examples of government basically coming out and saying, let's work together on this. And I think it basically vindicates the ranking that South Africa gets in terms of its framework, where it's actually coming out as top out of the 94 countries surveyed against it. And I think that we should actually welcome the transparency with which most of these things have actually been done by government and continue to be so. I think I'm going to stop here, Jefferson, and thank you very much for the opportunity to present.
Thank you, Mr. Kumalam, and your team. We also recognize the presence of Honorable Shigoni, a person of the Standing Committee of Appropriations. Welcome, Mr. Shigoni, and his members from that specific committee. Questions? Dr. George? Please, could you switch off your cell phones? It's interfering with recordings. This is also broadcasted on television live for all South Africans, so please put off your cell phones. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just in the budget review, there's an indication that the government will consolidate the fiscal position in line with economic growth. And clearly that's the million-dollar question. Is the economic growth path, as suggested by government, sustainable? If one looks at some of what the economists have said, for example, globally, our domestic economy relies on the global economy. Globally, one looks at high personal debt levels, one looks at high government debt levels, one looks at a slowing Chinese economy, and of course one looks at the Middle East instability and the fuel price. We look at inflation rising, we look at interest rates rising. So my question is, how realistic is our economic growth path for South Africa, and what impact will that have on the deficit? We have obviously all indicated our concerns last year with the increase in government deficit and government debt levels. And we already see where in October we had a deficit forecast of 4.6, we now looking at 5.3%. 2012, it was forecast of 3.9, we're looking at 4.8. 2013, 3.2%, we're now looking at 3.8. So our concern is that increase in deficit, and if one looks at the government's proposed economic model, how sustainable it is, even on their own level. Could you please comment on that? Thank you.
Dr. George.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for your presentation. On page number 16, you mentioned, or you asked a question. You say, will South Africa achieve higher growth through its fiscal stance? Now, that question has already been answered, because if we have a look at the fiscal framework as set out in a medium-term budget policy statement in October and now in February, we see that government is projecting a lower GDP growth rate, even though they are stepping on the accelerator for expenditure. So what we have on the fiscal framework here, we have increased expenditure, but we've got a projected decrease in GDP growth. So to me, that indicates that government does not expect its spending to stimulate the economy. So the spending is not focused in the right place. For example, if there was accelerated spending or a reduction of revenue because there were interventions to stimulate the economy that would generate growth, that would then generate the jobs and then the revenue, you wouldn't have a problem on possible tax increases. But that circle doesn't seem to be there. So it seems to me that if this budget is focusing on the wrong side of the economy, there's too much consumption spending and not enough productive spending. Do you have any view on that? Because technically, counter-cyclical fiscal policy says that when your business cycle goes into the wrong place, i.e. your economy is shrinking, government will increase its expenditure so that it can kick-start economic activity. And this is not happening in this fiscal framework, so it's hugely concerning. And then on page number 12, you are mentioning the proposed tax structure designed to support economic growth. Now, I actually can't see that at all, because how can the tax structure that's being proposed support economic growth when government itself says that it doesn't expect the economy to grow, in fact, it expects it to shrink? So that really doesn't make sense to me, and I'd like you to explain it if you can. And then finally, on the issue about levies, we know that levies, as opposed to tax, are inflationary. We're going into a possibly high inflation environment given the troubles in the Middle East, but we were already heading for higher inflation because of the shrinking supply side and an increasing demand side. That's just obvious. So we now have a situation where government is increasing levies, which would be extra inflationary. So are they not putting pressure in the wrong place? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Kurnoff.
Thank you, Chairperson. We all know now that the share of the revenue, 44.3%, is going to the provinces. Now, roughly 40% of that 44% is being paid out to the provincial wage bill, salaries of the civil service in the provinces. I would like to know whether the Fiscal Commission are in a position to conduct a study whether we do get value for our rand in the provinces, and if they can, whether they will do it.
Thank you, Chair and the Co-Chair. Firstly, I would like to appreciate the presentation from the Fiscal Commission. However, maybe I was expecting more from them, and I'm a bit unhappy about what I've just received thus far. The reason for that is that, you know, as a committee, and maybe coming from the ANC side, we really appreciate information that has got solutions. Because most of the issues we are aware of, but we just need some assistance as to be helped. If the commission coming to their page where they were giving us how can a South African fiscal framework can be improved, we're going through those two or three pages, you find that it's more of like we need to have commitment, we need to do the enforcement. And what we're expecting, Commissioner, was this is what we're expecting. This is how we see the improvement. Boom, 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 keeping it in point so that we are able to engage and say to ourselves, is that feasible? Can we achieve that? Now it's more of like an instruction saying, you need to consider, you need to commit, but what to consider, we don't know. What commitment we need to improve? What enforcement do we need to ensure that constitutional amendments and policy guidelines are effective and efficient? We don't get it. That is the first one. But the second one, too, is that I didn't get, unfortunately, I came in, I'm so sorry, the name of the gentleman next to the commissioner, where he was proposing that financing of the NHI needs to be through the tax funding. However, we also need the contribution from the private sector. I'm sure the government would love to have that. But if then there was a guideline as to how to achieve that objective, we were going to appreciate it, because it's true, we would love to have that. And you also indicated that borrowing is necessary. However, we need to ensure that the borrowing is necessary to pursue the counterfactual policies. Yes, we agree, we know about that. But to say we need to ensure that exposure to foreign exchange is considered. What exactly is that? What exactly is that? Because now this is the information that is missing from the presentation, and we would love to have that information, because we are an expert in this way. You understand what is happening, and this is the information that we need as the committee to assist us that those things are done. Talking about the sin taxes are there to stop the behavior. The societal unacceptable behavior, trying to increase it. But the fiscal commissioner is looking at it like you are increasing the sin taxes, however you are creating another societal problem, which is a problem where the children might be disadvantaged from the income, because more of the income is going to be spent on the sin, because now it's an addictive. It's an existing product that has been managed. Now, having said that, I think I've got a confusion now. I don't know what the commissioner is trying to explain to us here. Is the commissioner trying to help us to say, look, sin taxes are to be there because those societal behaviors are to be stopped. But now, if you see another societal problem, or so some social ill coming because of this, what do we need to do? It's a question. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move this on the
way. Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, maybe I must start by really passing my weight of appreciation. I mean, at the rate at which intercontinentally we are interacting and sharing experiences among ourselves as African countries. But I also think, really, Chair, the presence of our colleagues from Kenya is a clear indication that we are doing this at a very acceptable rate. And I really want to extend, I mean, my Kiswahili greetings to our Kenyan delegation. Abanzenu was there, Abanzenu. Ndugu zetu Abanzenu wakubwa. Maybe getting to the business of the day, allow me, Chair, to reinforce the question posed by Honorable Matameni on the funding scenario on the National Health Insurance. Not unless I'm confused with the mandate of the Commission. But I think the Commissioner was very clear in indicating that they don't have a position yet. But I just want to know, I mean, when can we get a position of the Commission around this? Because as you are all, I mean, aware, it's quite a topical issue, and it's important that more especially at our level as a committee, we tap into the sound advice from the commission around this particular issue, more especially the founding model of the NHI. When can we expect to get the exact position of the commission on this matter? Second, teacher, on the investment that we are currently doing on education, I'm not sure if the investment project that we are taking on education is it really on course. I mean, to ensure that we realize, or maybe this intervention or this investment in education yields the required result. Is this trajectory we are following on education, is it an appropriate one to ensure that we realize the targeted result? But also, is there any evidence proving, because in the presentation, it has been clearly stated that there is evidence to show that health and investment done on health are really assisting to deal with issues of economic growth. Now, I'm not sure if there's any evidence, I mean, to show that education is also assisting in as far as the growing of our economy is concerned. And last, Chair, once more, I mean, trying to add on the question posed by Honourable Matlamini, how severe are these perverse outcomes as a result of think tanks? Do we have an analysis that indicates what are the opportunity costs of option A that has been suggested by the Ministry, increasing sin taxes, and this option of not increasing sin taxes because there are these perverse outcomes as a result of these increases? Can we get an analysis that is comparing these two options, maybe to get an indication if there is an option that we need to consider between the two? Thank you.
Honorable Mashiri.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the issue that I wanted to raise is the very one that has been raised by the last speaker. But my intention was to request FSC to move a step forward, at least to make that particular research that talks to the syntax. I think over a period of time we have government, we have adopted a position that says when we increase the sin taxes, people will stop spending money on them. But ourselves as well as civic leaders, we come across this almost on a daily basis where you've got families that are actually ruined by all income being spent on this. But it still relates some sort of a perception. I don't believe that we can generalize and say that is the reality. It may be happening in certain corners of the country where you've got those people that spend a lot of money on drugs other than the family. But the only help we can get is for FSC to actually move 2-3 steps forward and give us a research outcome on this so that we can influence the treatment of syntaxes in our next country. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Murray.
Thank you, Chair. I will have to start with what the previous speaker has also talked about, syntaxes. If the objective with sin taxes is to influence people's human behavior, that is probably not a fiscal responsibility to do that. And if that is the case, we know that alcohol is also brewed from even flour. Does it mean that we have to put sin tax on flour now as well? Because it happens with yeast that they make that brew. has the FFC looked at the effect of sin taxes on the profitability of the agricultural, the primary agricultural sector affected by that, and also the jobs that are lost or maintained? Because my information is that there are widely credible information available that talks about the contrary, about that farming operations becoming less profitability and people losing their jobs because they cannot pass on all the sin tax increases to the consumers. So I want to have your comment on that. Then secondly, you have indicated on page 4 that the Commission's projection in GDP does not recover to business as usual even by 2015. What are you actually telling us? What can we expect? Do you disagree with what government has said, creating jobs, 5 million new jobs by 2020, for which we need an average of a 7% GDP over 10 years? You can just respond to that one specifically. And then have you looked at specific applications in this framework? For instance, like on page 5, where the top point where you said government has put economic growth at center of job creation, and then you talk about the NGP and the 9 million rand jobs fund. How many of those funds really go to the small and medium enterprise business as a direct injection into that small business, or does it go to CITAS and all that implicated? And also, have you looked at other specific applications like the money that is allocated to the National Youth Development Agency, whether that is within the framework, money well spent in terms of realistically achieving the objectives? Thank you.
Dr. Mdengue.
Thank you, Chaco Cortez. I think I'm partly covered with the questions that I wanted to pose, especially by Dr. George, in relation to the spending patterns on infrastructure development as against the input. The Commissioner has actually reflected on the aspect that relates to the quantification of the expenditure versus the impact of that expenditure, which is a problem. So, in that way, the Commissioner has actually preempted the question, but we need answers from the Commission to say, how do you deal with that when we have an auditor general that is looking at the spending patterns in terms of figures, not the actual impact or the outcome of that spending? That's a growing problem, because yes, funds will be spent and departments will get unqualified reports, but on the ground you don't see anything. No improvement of the particular deliverable that was expected. And then lastly, the issue that relates to the facility development. When you look at the budget, nothing much was actually said about the facility development of sports in rural areas. There is an MIG being mentioned to say a local government will deal with that. There is no ring fencing that says facility development of sport as a legacy project of 2010. There is no emphasis. And even the presenters that we had last week, they were wishy-washy in relation to this because there was actually nothing much that was said maybe the MIG, because infrastructure development, municipal infrastructure grants in relation to local government, it doesn't prioritize sport. Yeah, I mean, sport is one of those things, but the priority, you find that it's roads, water, and other infrastructure. Then mayors will ask you as to how do I prioritize sport when people are crying for roads and water. So what is it that we can do? Because if we are investing much on youth development, you can't go about that without the improvement of the sporting facilities. Let me just end this here. Thank you.
A very important question that can only also be posed to the Minister of Sport in the House, as well as to the Minister when that Minister presents the budget vote on sport, affecting people in the rural areas. Chair, I'd like to take the commission. I'd like to refer to page 7. What they say there is that the NHI was allocated 8 billion rand. And I'd like to quote further. It states specifically that it poses a fiscal risk. Now, Chair, we have a very narrow tax base. In fact, I think if we look at the tax burden of the ordinary taxpayer in our country, and you compare it with a number of other developmental countries, I think that we, with due respect, there's reason to be a serious concern. I'd just like to have the view of the Commission. What is the fiscal risk involved and the long-term implications? And before I end, Chair, another scenario is also point or being stated there in this particular page. You say any increase in public spending would need to be financed with increased taxes on household income. At present, our household debt to personal or disposable income is a alarming rate. I would like to state the latest figure, but the economists also said that we should really try and tell them or reduce our personal debt in relation to disposable income. But I'd just like to have the views of the Commission, because if we have a debt burden in such magnitude, it will definitely increase economic growth, and economic growth will also have an effect on long-term job prospects. Thank you, Chair. Honourable Shibwani.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning. Sir, I think that a number of questions have been raised by colleagues. However, Chair, in my understanding, the clarity for us maybe that FSC could assist us in, and we sometimes. I'm not sure if we're not seeming to be distorting what the Treasurer said or the Minister said in the MDBS. It would look to me that it was indicated at the time that for the foreseeable future there will be a rise in the debt, which will peak at a particular time, and that was put at 2013. Now, is this, I'm sorry that I missed maybe the earlier parts of the presentation, but I'm just taking from what the colleagues are saying here. They seem to be saying we are not going to be, it's not going to be possible for us as South Africa to reach, to make that peak as a result of the way the debt now we are it is continuing, but also in my understanding is that shouldn't we be saying that as South Africans we're going the right direction, looking at what the predictions that perhaps the Minister of Treasury made
in the, what you call it, in October for the medium term budget policy statement as well, where it was to dictate that the shortfall this time would be around 6.9 at a time, which now has actually lessened to 5.3. So, and what I want to check is, aren't we making progress in terms of ensuring that we reduce the, what you call it, the debt, which means that we are investing correctly in the economy. That is one issue, Chair. But also what I'm not very sure about, the statement that I saw is a contrast between the budget, fiscal consolidation and the and job creation. I'm not sure what FSC is saying there. Because I thought that the from the State of the Nation address by the President and the Minister, where it put clear what you call resources in terms of how much is will be put where in order to ensure that the jobs are created. Now, I'm not sure what we're saying exactly. But also, Chair, what really worries me as well is as members of Parliament, I think that the question that we're not raising is, in the whole watercolor scenario, what is our role? It looks to me that we see ourselves as passive, what we call it, spectators there, not perhaps doing the role that we're supposed to be playing in terms of saying, are these resources going where they are intended, or where where they were meant to? I'm not sure. We should make the executive to account. I think that is our constitutional role as members of Parliament. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Spooney. Mr. Marius Swart, we've got two Mr. Swarts here, Mr. Steve and Marius Swart. They are not brothers.
Jay, this is part of the Swart part.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, be careful.
I'm called Big Swart.
But you get, Chair, I've been largely covered by the Honourable Moray, but I just would like to add to the fiscal, to the FFC, the question of the job creation portion of the EPWP program, the Extended Public Works program, because at the moment there are already 800 million underspent on the EPWP program. Now, it's no use telling me that it's an incentive scheme, then there's something wrong with the scheme. What are we going to do, because it's not going to create the jobs that we think it's going to create, and there's an increase in the provision for the EPWP program. Do you think that we will have success with the EPWP program?
Honourable Gelderboom, did you put up your hand? No. Includes the questions. Honourable Sigourney, you forgot something?
I'm sorry, sir. Thank you very much. That's a small thing, Chair. I think the issue of the syntax was raised very strongly amongst the members. But perhaps, yeah, I'm sure you'll protect me, Chair.
Proceed with your question.
Yes.
Just look at our time, please.
Yeah, sure. But, perhaps, maybe the question that we could put to FFC is, isn't generally the issue of raising syntax meant to strike a balance between the health society that we want to look at and what you call it, and continuing just creating a free way of engaging in the, what you call those matters that are involved in syntax. I think the colleague there spoke about the lost opportunity between just saying that, well, let's hold our arms, those people who want to smoke must continue doing so, those who want to drink must continue doing so, and the government must do nothing about it. So where do we strike the balance? Thank you.
We also note the presence of National Treasury. They are present in this meeting and listening and taking down notes of what all the members are saying, and also responses from the different organizations. Mr. Kamalo, you may respond. There was a lot of questions. According to the program, we have to break for tea at 10:55. Guidance, if I'm getting here from Madi, you can answer the questions fully. Good enough time.
Okay, thank you, honorable co-chair.
Yeah, I was asking for the co-chair. I know that very much. Like all national treasuries, if you give them a plan, you need to regulate the attack. So as you answer, just be mindful of time. That's all that I'll share to my question. Especially for when you can go to town.
Let me not go to town then.
I think, well, if you can do it after 11 o'clock.
Okay. No, what I've actually done is I've grouped these questions into those that are of a technical nature. And those that I can simply respond to, because they really are about what the Commission's views on these particular issues are. So those I will deal with in my capacity as the Chairman of the Commission, and the technical questions that have been asked around growth rates and whether we can sustain growth and all of that, Dr. Mabuhu will respond to that, if need be, there are issues that have been asked about how we mitigate the risk. I really don't think that as a Commission, we are in a position to tell government how to mitigate risks around fiscal frameworks. We would rather highlight those risks, and then government must take a position on the best way they want to do that. And I'm sure Matthew would want to say a few things around how those risks that we have identified and listed here can actually be taken into consideration. So let me start with the matter of the syntax. And why we are saying what we are saying about the syntax. I think the syntax basically is a very good way of raising revenue from people who are irresponsible. That's what we can actually say. These are irresponsible people, and therefore we must actually tax them so that they behave properly. I don't think that it's as simple as that, because at the end of the day, there is addiction. There's also rehabilitation of those that are addicted. So when you're taxing people out of this, there's also the downside of it, where you've got to make sure that they don't get back into that with a proper program for rehabilitating alcoholics, for rehabilitating drug addicts, for rehabilitating all sorts of things that we must actually take into consideration. So the optimality of the intervention from the tax side, there is obviously a point where you can't, it's almost like reaching a dead dog. So all we are saying is that take people out of this, but also make sure that there are other interventions that come with it that will basically support the tool that you are, the primary tool that you are using is basically taxing them. You try to tax them, make it as expensive as possible, but also rehabilitate them, because as he has indicated, this is anecdote, and I would suspect that quite a lot of us here, on a day-to-day basis, we meet those kinds of families where the head of the family or the head of the household is an alcoholic or is addicted to alcohol and is smoked. And so we have to deal with it in conjunction with other supportive programs that actually address those kinds of social ills that we are trying to deal with, not simply by texting people and then letting everything to itself. That's the message that we are trying to put there. On the matter of the provincial wage bill, I think it's Honorable Cornock, and whether or not
from the commission's point of view, we can conduct an exercise to check whether we're actually getting value from the provincial wage bill. I think that is not a problem. It's really it's about looking at what it is that provinces are doing. It's about looking at what different organs within the provincial sphere of government are doing and what the costs of maintaining those are. Those are numbers that you can actually make available for you to make a decision whether there's value for money or there's not a value for money. From the Commission's perspective, I don't think it is probably our mandate to say there is value for money, because this is a sphere of government that this state has decided that it's going to have, and therefore we can deal with those things in that way. We can provide the information if it's actually needed. On the issue of the NHI, let me just put a context to it. I did indicate from the outset that these recommendations or this submission that you are making is in terms, it has to be read together with the submission that we tabled in 2010 in May. And we presented our initial views on the fiscal framework when we made our submission on the MTBPS. So in reading this, one has to consistently make reference to the issues that were raised there. What we have now is we have what government wanted. We raised in those submissions that we don't have sufficient information on the NHI. We don't have sufficient information on the new growth path. We don't have, so we listed those areas where government needed to provide a little bit of guidance to the Commission so that we can be able to take positions on those particular issues. Now, in our response, because when the Minister tabled the budget, he actually highlighted a few things around the NHI. He also highlighted a few things around, for example, rules for sustainable fiscal policy. He highlighted a few things around the new growth path. That is when we actually got to look at this in a more direct way. There is some information that is here, and we quickly ran some exercises around it, and we put together some initial views. Our submission will be a submission for 2012 that will be tabling in May. And that submission will contain the recommendations from the Commission on this particular matter that the Minister has tabled for discussion during the course of this year. So we can have a further interaction with the committees once we have tabled our submissions with concrete sets of recommendations. These are initial reactions to what has been tabled, and we are giving you some information on the direction in which the Commission would likely go and how it would then deal with this particular matter. So the issues around the NHI, the issues around the new growth path, the issues around, what was the other one? I think there are three specific issues or the fiscal rules. We basically cannot give you very concrete responses to that, that this is the Commission's position. What we have given you are initial views from the Commission that are based on the little information that we have around this particular matter, because they have been out there in the public, they have been talked about, but we did not have what the views of government as approved by cabinet and tabled by the minister when he tabled the budget, what the views of government are. So we couldn't actually base our position on speculation. That is why we left some of these things as questions, but if you read the actual written submission that we submitted yesterday, you would probably pick up a little bit more information on the issues that you say we left questions. There is some information that you can actually get from there. On the issue of there's an issue that has been raised about the issue of sports and culture. And I think the Honourable Member raised it when the National Treasury and the Minister briefed the committee. Now, let me reiterate that the issue of sports and culture
is a bit of a vexing issue when it comes to infrastructure. And from the Commission's point of view, it's really a matter of the function. Where does the function lie? We have had interactions with one or two provinces around the allocation on the budget for sport. And if I can mention it, it's Caltech, basically. They came to us to question how to know how the budget for sport is actually made. Now, we have also, on the other hand, have interactions with organized local government, SALGA in particular, about an unfunded mandate, which is basically what you're referring to. So those issues basically depend on a clear assignment of powers and functions between the provinces and the municipalities. I mean, in the past, municipalities used to do these things. Now, if you change the powers and functions, then they can't just stop doing it. It's still something that must be done, and some of the municipalities still need an unfunded mandate. So from our perspective, the clarification needs to be upfront on the powers and functions, and that's it. The issue of information, I think you raised an issue around Auditor General just presenting financial information, and we saying you need to enforce certain enforcement of some of these pieces of legislation. I think the point that we are raising is that at this point in time, we are all aware that the Auditor General is also auditing performance information. So that is actually a way in which you can then deal with that gap that was there. So we're just saying that let's take stock of what we have before we can start thinking about introducing new rules and procedures, when we're not actually utilizing what we have in a useful way. Can I just ask someone to respond to the few technical questions that you asked? I think most of them are very related.
Thank you. The first technical issue pertains to the tax structure and economic growth. And on that, from the Commission perspective, evidence is that the most harmful type of debt for economic growth is corporate debt, followed by personal income tax, and then consumption taxes. And when you look at the tax proposals that have been tabled, they actually are framed in that sense that they prioritize the tax structure in that way, that you're not getting increases from corporate tax, personal income tax, and the consumption taxes. So that's where we're coming from by saying that the tax structure proposed is actually in line with what we would expect a good debt structure for economic growth to be like. And on the question on public expenditure and economic growth, what I can say there is that based on some econometric evidence that we have, quantifying the impact of government expenditure on economic growth, we do find that health and transport do have a very positive growth elasticity. And when you look at the priorities, those are getting quite high priorities. And it is in that sense that we are saying priorities on health, transport, and so on are actually in the right sort of areas. That's based on our findings on how those expenditures do impact on South African economic growth. And there was a technical question on the projection that even at 2015, we are not yet back at the usual growth for the economy. And there is to really understand what our projection is doing. The business as usual that we are tracking is how the economy would have grown without the economic crisis that hit the economy 2008-2009, when the economy was going in 5% the growth rate per annum. So what our projections are telling us here is that if government does nothing and continues on the same trajectory, we will not reach those kinds of levels until 2015. So it's to be understood in the context of the growth path that we had attained prior to the global economic crisis. And I think when you look at even the forecasts that are coming out, they are saying that they are expecting the economy to grow 3.4%, but that still growth compared to the previous year where there has been a dip in economic growth. It's not yet at the business as usual or where the economy would have been had we not suffered from the economic crisis. Yeah. On the technical questions, there has been one on the I hope we've managed to respond to all of the questions today. Somewhere in the same document, then say
in order to be on the same path with a developing economy or emerging economy of almost 56% employment, South Africa will have to do certain things in order to reach that. What I wanted to ask is, what is the actual percentage growth that we should be targeting from your own analysis? You're going to reach the 9 million jobs that may need to be created in the next 10 years instead of 5 million jobs. Because even the 3.4 growth rate to 4.something growth rate will not necessarily take us to the 5 million. Now, if we're to move to 9 million jobs to be created in the next 10 years, what kind of growth rate are you looking at?
I think that question is actually sitting in some of the work that we are currently doing. So we are still running that exercise. But I think Dr. Mabuku can say something about that. There are initial results basically around that. The work that we started after the Minister of Economic Development briefed the committees on the new process. So there is something.
To correct you, page 4, of the review document, budget review document, where it's about 18.1 million South Africans who have regular jobs and only 8 million have formal jobs. And then to achieve the average emerging market employment ratio of 56%, and taking into account population growth, South Africa would have to create 9 million jobs in the next 10 years. But it's not actually underpinned by what kind of growth rate should we target as a country.
Yes, so I think the arithmetic behind the 5 million jobs emanates from an understanding that if the economy grows at roughly 3%, it creates around 2.4 million jobs. So if you want 5 million jobs or a doubling of that, you're looking at around 7% economic growth to go to 7 million jobs by 2020. So if you want 9 million jobs instead of 7 million jobs, again, we can do the arithmetic, but it will have to be above 7% growth rate per annum, all the way up to 2020. Now, a key factor here is, why we are growing at 3.4%? This is for 2011. And those targets are up to 2019-2020. So there is still close to a decade of doing something about increasing the growth rate beyond the 3.4%. And it's what those growth drivers are that would be interesting for this committee. So we are at 3.4%, and if we maintain that, we will not get the 5 million jobs. But we still have time between now and 2019-20 to put measures in place to try and grow the economy at those high costs.
Sorry, Coach. The chair, that's at a very critical point here. I was going to add and say, much as they are estimating those numbers now, I still don't strongly believe that we get the factual information until they redo the census 2011, which give us the proper population density, then they're able to come out with a proper estimation as far as the growth rate vis-a-vis the job creation.
Very important point, that you responded to all the questions. We must,
and I think I have, because some of the questions are indicated that you will get the answers when we interact with our submission in May.
Yes.
we must hope and pray that we are not hit by another economic world crash. These are all projections, and we are our economy is interlinked with the world economy. So anything that's happening elsewhere in the world is going to affect us, and will affect these figures. They are all projections. That's why there are economists and analysts that are talking to South Africa every morning, 20 minutes past 6, on the radio. And if you've got 10 of them, you will have 10 different opinions. So that's my experience listening, and Mr. Schuster is sitting there at the back. But thank you for the input. Honourable members, we're going to break for tea now. 5 minutes past 11.